I'm John Krall. The Indiana Conference for Women is next week. Today on No Limits, we'll talk about the conference specifically and about the challenges and opportunities before women in this rapidly changing world. We'll discuss work, wages, and basic fairness. My guests are the conference's co-founders, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Next week marks the fifth Indiana Conference for Women. We're going to be talking about the conference, but also really talking about the challenges and opportunities before women in this rapidly changing world. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are the co-founders of the conference, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. Billy is the co-founder of the conference, CEO, and founder of RepuCare. And Deborah is the managing partner for the Center of Innovative Leadership. Also should say that that this is pledge time here at WFYI, and I would like to encourage everyone to do the right thing. You'll feel good if you did, and make a pledge to WFYI. You can do so by going to wfyi.org/give, or you can just call us at 1-800-233-0020. Be sure you make your pledge. You will feel better if you do. Well, Billy, Deborah, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. So tell me a little bit first about what the conference is, okay?
The conference is the largest gathering of professional women across our state, our city, and we have a lot of people coming in from out of the state, too. And it's about professional development and educational breakout sessions. And we have over 50 moderators and keynote speakers that will be attending this conference. And we're actually sold out, so we're thrilled about that at 1,400.
So 1,400 people are coming?
Yes.
Okay. So that was, you anticipated my next question. If people still wanted to attend, is there a way to do it?
A lot of times that we have tables that are bought and by a lot of our sponsors will have some seats available. But at this point, yeah, we're pretty much sold out.
However, we have reserved a few seats for the day of. If you'd like to attend, you could show up at the JW.
Okay, and what is the cost to attend?
$295.
Yes.
Okay, and who are some of the speakers this year?
Well, first of all, we select national thought leaders from across the country. They're either PhD prepared in their field or they're best-selling authors. This year we have several keynoters, Arianna Huffington, who co-founded the Huffington Post, Jessica Herron, who co-founded and is CEO of Stella and Dot. We have a wonderful young woman named Mickey Agrawal, who co-founded a social entrepreneurial company called Thinks. We have, as Billy said, numerous breakout sessions with a team that wrote a book called From Grit to Great, and they also, in their spare time, launched what is now a $500 million ad agency.
And we have Moria Forbes from Forbes magazine, and has she developed the women's leadership professional development for Fortune. We have Whitney Houston, Whitney Johnson, I'm sorry, that is...
that would be quite a feat,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, that would be a miracle,
sorry,
yeah.
Actually. Whitney Johnson is with Springboard Ventures and has written Dare, Dream, and Do.
Which is the theme of our conference.
Yes. So we have an amazing
How do you go about selecting who you want to have speak?
Well, we first of all, we look at their credentials. I should say that we mix in women leaders from our state into this.
We have wonderful women leaders.
For example, Idie Kessner, the dean from the Kelly School of Business, will be doing a session on the brand called You.
Mm-hmm.
And she's teamed up with some national thought leaders and also wonderful leaders from our state. So we look at the credentials. We look at their speaking ability. One of the things that I think it's important for people to know, in the past we've had Martha Stewart in 2013. Most of our speakers speak for free.
Okay.
And the keynoters have dropped their fees substantially. So it's a wonderful way for us to showcase women thought leaders.
Is there do you decide on a theme for each conference and then say, and build a roster of prospective speakers?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, we do.
And I also want to mention that we have, our former lieutenant governor that is now the president of Ivy Tech, Sue Elserman, will be involved.
She's been a guest on this show.
She's lovely. And also we have people like Terry Burks, one of the partners at Barnes & Thornburg, which is also a sponsor, and they will be hosting our VIP party. What I want to kind of get the message out is this conference is co-founded by Deborah and I, and we spend an enormous amount of time working with it, but the people that work on our team do it gratis. And we have an incredible team of people that do a lot of in-kind work, which amounts to thousands of dollars. This conference takes around $500,000 to put on. So without their help, it would be much more expensive. So I really want to shout out to those folks that do help us with that.
So take me through the genesis of the conference when it got started. This is going to be the fifth one, right?
Yes.
So how did the idea to have an Indiana conference for women come about? And I gather some of that is the story of how the two of you got acquainted or decided to work together.
I had spent the past 30 years living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there was a conference that started out very small that's one of the largest in the United States. And I had this wonderful group of women leaders who had mentored me, helped me. I moved back to Indiana, my home state, in 2006, and I knew only one woman, my mom. And I had just a big hole. So lo and behold, I picked up Fortune magazine one day, and there's a picture of Billy Dragoo. And she had been named one of the top 10 entrepreneurs in the nation. And I looked at it and I thought, oh my gosh, she's right here in my own backyard. And as things happened, someone in my neighborhood actually knew her. And the next thing I know, we were having breakfast, which turned into lunch. And there just were no resources for women at the time. And we both carried that in our hearts, that it was such a big part of our life. And so we teamed up to do this, and I'll let you, Billy, finish the story.
Well, we actually met at the for breakfast at the Conrad downtown at the time, and so Deborah, I had obviously done some research on Deborah's background, and she's considered one of the most thoughtful thought leaders across the country, has authored 7 books, and one of them on
This is not the life I ordered.
But, no, the other one, Maslow.
Maslow on Manage.
Was on the bestseller forever. But This Is Not the Life I Ordered was the book I asked her to bring with me. And this is a wonderful book, a vignette of 5 different women that come together to write this book. And these vignettes are about their life history and their stories, which the book made me laugh, cry, and actually feel really good by the time I finished it about myself. Not only as a woman, but all the trials and tribulations I personally have gone through as for a very long time was single with 2 children and then starting a business, you know, out of my home 20 some years ago. So it kind of resonated with me on a lot of different levels. And I was just enamored with the book. And I think I helped you sell a lot of those.
Yeah, Billy sold a lot of my book. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And out of that book, There's another person that Deborah mentored at Indiana University, and that, there's another book called This Is Not the Career I Ordered, and I think that came from your book. Am I correct?
Yes, it did. So Billy was a kindred spirit, and when we started this, no one even knew what we were talking about. And Billy seems – actually, Billy knows everybody in Indiana. If there's – I don't think there's no one that she knows. So we just started meeting with people. And as I had mentioned previously, what's interesting is the first people to back us to write us checks to put this on were two men who continue to support us. And I ironically, every year, because it is an educational forum, we honor someone from Indiana. The first year was Eleanor Ostrom, the first woman to win the Nobel Prize from Indiana. Then Madam C.J. Walker. This year, we will be honoring the suffragettes who secured women the right to vote.
72 years it took them to do that.
And there were so many from our state that played a role, a national role. And one of the things...
It's hard to believe, but Indiana actually at one point was kind of a radical hotbed. We don't think of our state that way, but it was.
It was.
It was. And I always say to Billy, in a past life, Billy, I know you were a suffragette.
Well, the other thing I wanted to bring to point too is that this conference encompasses and how it's different, and there's a lot of wonderful women business conferences out there, a lot of them. I think how ours is different is it really has a big arm on professional development and educational development, but also the people that attend this conference are between 18 years old and 70. And it's not just women business owners. It's 25% millennials. 45 to 50% are C-suite women in their corporations and places of work. And then the other 25 is entrepreneurs. And that 25% that attend that are entrepreneurs, we have also a pitching session that we actually have four very well-known judges that will judge people that have been selected to pitch in front of these judges to get funded. So we have a broad mixture of women that attend and a lot of different things for them to attend at that conference with different breakout sessions that can fuel their growth in their businesses, in their corporations, or in their personal life.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the 2016 Indiana Conference for Women. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So when you got this started then, you know, more than 5 years ago now, what was your vision for it? When you were soliciting that initial support, what did you say to those potential donors? This is what we want to do. This is what we want to accomplish.
Well, we talk about this having the lifespan of the next 30 years, that there will always be this conference where women from all over our state and the Midwest can gather, because it's very inspirational. And also, it results in things. We've seen women get new jobs. We've seen them, their businesses funded. We've seen them go back to school. I think the story that keeps me going is there was a young woman from a rural area, and she stood in the back of the room, and she was almost in tears saying, "This makes me believe I can do something with my life."
So, you know, it was about creating some longevity and creating a kind of institutionalized network. Or
we are a 501c3, and that became,
and that means that you're a not-for-profit.
Not-for-profit,
so and when people make contributions, they're tax deductible.
Right, but we also want to made it a 501c3, so we can look at the money that if there's any left over to be able to provide that as a scholarship to a woman or a girl. And with that comes, you know, the ability to build a broader and bigger ecosystem and a platform for women to learn and be educated from, but also develop a thoughtful group of women for a think tank. And as you know, many things bubble out of that.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the 2016 Indiana Conference for Women, which is next week, next Wednesday. To be precise, my guests are the co-founders, Billy Dergue and Deborah Collins-Stevens. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Also, would like to encourage all of the folks who listen to this program to make their pledges to WFYI. You can do so by going to wfyi.org/give, or you can call us at 1-800-233-0020. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the 2016 Indiana Conference for Women, which is next Wednesday, October 26th. My guests are Billy Dergue, who's the co-founder of the conference, along with Deborah Collins-Stevens. Billy, in addition to that part of her life, is the CEO and founder of RepuCare. And Deborah is managing partner for the Center of Innovative Leadership. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. And because this is pledge time here at WFYI, I'd also take it as a personal favor if you would make a gift to WFYI. You can do so by going to wfyi.org/give, or you can call us at 1-800-233-0020. Well, before the break, we were talking about sort of how the conference came together. I'm going to ask kind of an odd question here, but I think it gets to sort of the heart of the challenge. And that is, do you sort of hope that there's a time when a conference like this isn't necessary? Let me explain the backdrop on that. I remember sitting in a diversity workshop years ago when I worked at the newspaper, and a guy who was older than I was complained at one point. He said, "You know, we at that point I was not yet middle aged. We middle aged white guys are the only ones who don't have, you know, a lobby in Washington, D.C. And I looked at him and said, "Yeah, that's because we elect ours. They're called Congress." you know, but a lot of what this strikes me is that many men don't do these things, in part because they have all of these informal networks that aren't even really acknowledged set up. And there has to be an attempt to create something that is a little more institutionalized to run parallel to that. Am I completely off base there, Deborah, or
let me answer that by saying the reason this is necessary in my lifetime are the statistics show that...
Oh, and I'm not disputing that it is necessary.
No, the statistics show that in my lifetime, it will be my great-great-granddaughter who, when we achieve parity. And for me, that's just too long to wait. Mm-hmm. I also think that men understand this even more so because of their daughters. Mm-hmm. They don't want opportunities blocked for their daughters or their granddaughters. And I'm very optimistic and positive of the women leaders that, like the whole level under the CEO in most corporations are filled with women. We're graduating women leaders from our colleges every year. And so over the next decade, I'm very optimistic of what will happen with our women leaders.
Well, and I'd like to expound on that a little bit because, you know, women come together and lead differently than men for many different reasons, whether it's to network, build relationships, learn how they did it. I also think that, you know, we cycle through different leaders every year, every 5 years, every 10 years, every 20 years. And I think this gives them a platform to come and learn from each other. And kind of like Sally Krawcheck last year, a national thought leader, author, highly recognized. One of the stories that she told on stage that resonated with our audience in real life for women, because they hold so many different positions from the time they get up in the morning till they go to bed at night, whether it's work, whether it's being a mother, taking care of their families or their parents or their grandparents. So these wonderful celebrities and these keynote authors and speakers get up and talk about, you know, Sally Krawcheck was married a couple of times. Husband went out on her. She talked and made funny stories about that. She was fired from Wall Street two different times. So I think our audience really likes, as a woman, likes to hear these real life stories of these amazing people that go through the very same trials and tribulations that they do on a daily basis. So I think that there's always going to be a need for a conference like this, for people to come together to work and learn how they run their corporations or some of the things that they experience and share those. And, you know, we have a lot of academia involved in this conference. Mm-hmm. Purdue, Indiana University has been one of our title sponsors from the time we started this conference. Yes, and it would not be possible without Indiana University and Lori McRobbie and her team. So I think there's always going to be a need for, again, I'm going to go back to women.
Yeah, and I
lead differently.
And I want to make sure that my question was understood there. I'm not disputing the need for the conference now. It's more that there are all of these really unexplored, unexamined networks in place to support men as they climb.
Yes,
I was mentored by many people along the way. I know I didn't make any climb that I was doing by myself. That network, you know, is something that isn't even acknowledged often, that it's there. That's what I'm trying to get at, because that seems to me to be a question
of parity.
Yes, I agree. And that's one of the things that I had when I was on the West Coast, which was much more developed than it is here. And it's much more developed on the East Coast. They both have a long way to go. Unfortunately, those networks are older. They're more developed, and we need that here. And especially when you look out 10 years from now, we're talking about being a hotbed for technology, for technology companies. Well, women are some of our most talented employees in this state. And what the statistics show that when women stay in an area, they become involved in the communities, and they spend over 90% of their income in that community. Mm-hmm. And so that community thrives. And so on the long term, I've always said this, when women and girls are healthy, the economy is healthy.
And I also think that to answer some of your – you just described how you were mentored by your peers and some folks in your network, John, is that we as women actually learn from men. I mean, I continually talk about, am I a feminist? Absolutely. But I also will say, I need you at my table because you guys can show us how to do that and do it better on some things. For example, reciprocity. You know, men really support each other. Whether they like what's discussed in that boardroom or in that room when they're having whether it's a professional discussion, and then when they go out of that boardroom or that corporate room, they're going to play golf and they're going to talk to each other and continue that friendship. Where women tend to personalize things more, and if there is a disagreement, they go out and they don't talk to each other for a while. So I think we can continue to learn from our male counterparts how to do that better.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Conference for Women, which is next Wednesday, October 26th. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener named Gary has done and connect with us via Facebook. You can find us there at No Limits WFYI. Gary says, question about the conference. How do you address supporting only one gender and the bias generally directed at the other gender? Basically saying, I think, how is the conference focused only on women? It's Gary's question, so I don't want to paraphrase it more than that.
We do have men who attend, and we welcome men. We focused on women, I think, for all of the reasons that we've been talking about.
Do you get that sort of question?
No, we don't.
Okay. No. I was going to say, because sometimes, yeah.
No, we don't at all.
I mean, I know when I have taken part in diversity workshops, that often is a complaint, and it's generally from older guys. Yeah.
Well, let's face it. You know, we do have a gender diversity issue in this country, and it's women on boards. It's access to capital. Less than 4% of venture money go to women-owned businesses in this country. Mm-hmm. So, and pay parity, you know, there's a lot of major issues there with women. So I think some of those things need to be continually addressed.
Well, and I want to get in because I think this is a fascinating subject, and it deals with a kind of challenge. And I want to make it clear, I'm not looking for kind of a partisan discussion here. Or endorse one candidate or another. But we got a moment in American history right now where for the first time in the country's history, a woman has become a major political party presidential nominee, you know, is a serious contender for what is the highest office, not just in the land, but the free world. And yet at the same time, it's still the campaign in many ways still seems to be all about the guy. Most of the attention is being focused there. And, you know, when we went on the air, we were talking about the fact that there's even loose chatter about trying to repeal the 19th Amendment. Some other incredibly disparaging comments about women have become part of the national dialogue now. That has to be frustrating that at the moment you have, we see this tremendous gain in gender equality, there are also kind of steps back as well.
I think that's a natural progression, unfortunately. Whenever there is a huge change, it takes time to sink in. If you look, as we were talking, if you go back in history and you look at the civil rights movement, it's two steps forward, one step back. I'm not sure that we're there yet.
Well, with that said, with the civil rights, it's only been since 1987 and an organization that I helped create here, and then I'm on a national board out of Washington, D.C., helped lobby and write this bill, House 5050, where women did not have to ask a male to co-sign for a refrigerator, a car, or a home. That's only been, 28 years ago or something like that?
Well, we've only had the right to vote.
Less than 100.
Less than 100.
But even to buy something.
I know.
And we are at the 90% of the buying power in this country today. Women will hold the wealth by 2020. 17% of the wealth in this country.
So the answer, here's how I feel.
Okay.
I think that we celebrated when we, the first black African-American became a nominee for a major party. We should celebrate whether she wins or not, that's a glass ceiling breaking. And we have a lot more glass ceilings to break.
And I would like to see more talk about that being phenomenal as a woman president in our country rather than hearing basically the rhetoric on both sides. And I'd rather hear that and the good things that come out of whatever happens in this election.
Do you see changes that result from that make, because as you point out, there are a lot of other glass ceilings. Will this make it easier to crack those other glass ceilings, do you think, or is there no carryover? Does each battle
have to be fought? I think there's carryover. I think there's carryover. Certainly. And I want to go back to that there are so many men in this country who support women leaders. And I've been supported by men all my life, men who opened doors for me that would have never opened. And I think it's going to take both men and women to we're on that path.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Really. Totally agree. But I still, I would like to say, I think it might change, but I think there's definite work to be done.
Yes.
We are talking about the upcoming Indiana Conference for Women, but more generally about the gains and challenges that women face in having a more inclusive role in our society, our culture, and our economy. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Art has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Art, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine.
I would suggest that women not only have had a long, long history of having great humanizing and civilizing influence, but that they have a distinctive competency in the area of psychic energy, intuition, and a whole host of unquantifiable things, and that qualitatively they make a great contribution to the civilization of the world. But in the Indianapolis area, I would think that when you have meetings like this, I don't know if you have any think tanks, any groups that meet on certain topics like general primary and secondary education, because I would think women with their knack for problem solving and sort of intuitive longer term examination of things and more patience sometimes than men have at identifying all the causative factors in the whole causation process from A to Z, that you could apply all that psychic energy and intuition and be able to come up with great strategies in a much faster period of time, which we need in this country so desperately.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Art. So is some of it, because the other thing that I will say the women in my life, starting with my mother, my sister, my wife, my daughter, always say is that the contributions that women can make often do not receive the value, or their value is not perceived in the fashion that
it's not recognized.
Yes.
That's why we're doing this conference also. We recognize all of these thought leaders and women leaders throughout our state. We recognize women who did amazing things in our past that the general public doesn't really even know about.
Yeah, there are so many talented women in the state, and we're still uncovering amazing stories, and not just like Madam C.J. Walker or Ellen Ostrom or the lady her name escapes me, a few years ago. Wonderful women business owners, wonderful women that are leading corporations. Like one of our panel is Melanie Hart, and she is the CEO of Taos in south of Bloomington. She's been the CEO of this Japanese-owned business for 26 years. There's just so much talent here, and we need to celebrate those women.
Why don't we hear those stories often?
And that's why we're having this conversation out.
I understand that. I understand that. But why is that a tide that you, in effect, have to buck? What are the forces that keep us from celebrating those women's stories as we would any other successful person?
Well, I think it's not anything keeping any barriers. Yeah. I think that we personally have to disrupt that whole platform and come together and say, like this conference, do you know that these are these kind of women here that are doing these wonderful, great things? I don't think that people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's our responsibility, I think, as leaders in our community, as women leaders and leaders of this conference, to bring this forward. And when we do, a lot of they listen. The men in our lives listen, and the women in our lives listen. So I think it's just knowledge is power.
And then let me give you an example. Sure. My daughter works at Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. And the women of Coca-Cola have become big supporters of our conference, and they attend, and and it's highly educational. They have things that they take back to their workplace, but they also bond and they support one another. We see a lot of that. Salesforce, a huge supporter of ours. They send a huge number of women.
Cummins, Eli Lilly, just a wonderful, wonderful support.
We are talking about the 2016 Indiana Conference for Women with the co-founders, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins Stevens. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the 2016 Indiana Conference for Women, which is October 26th. That's a week from tomorrow. My guests are Billy Dragoo, who is co-founder of the conference, along with Deborah Collins Stevens. In her other life, Billy is the CEO and founder of RepuCare. And Deborah is managing partner for the Center of Innovative Leadership. Also should say that this is pledge time here at WFYI, and I would encourage everyone listening to support this program and the many other fine programs that are part of the WFYI family. You can do so by going online at WFYI.org/give, or you can call us at 1-800-233-0020. So we've been talking about sort of the need that women have for events such as these. We ought to talk also about the benefit, I mean, the economic impact, the fact that we have a significant portion of our population that sometimes is underutilized. Presumably, because I've been listening to you for 40 minutes now and know you guys do your homework, you've got information about just what kind of impact this conference has and what kind of impact, the kind of efforts to mentor and increase participation would bring to this state and community.
Yes, Deborah. Let me give you a story. I think it was in 2013. I invited Jim Citrin. He's the chairman of Spencer Stewart. They've placed more women on corporate boards than anybody in the United States, and they are one of the top-tier executive search firms. He had never been to Indiana, never stepped foot in our state. He speaks at the Fortune conference. He placed Melissa Mayer at Yahoo. He placed the first woman on the Twitter board. And he's really an expert in leadership. He walked away with a vision of our state that just blew him away. He loved the downtown area. Lo and behold, it was his search firm who led the search for the new CEO of Angie's List. And when he left our conference, he left with the resumes of seven of our leading women in this state, one of which they interviewed for the CEO position at the in Fort Wayne? A major corporation.
Oh, Vera Bradley?
Vera Bradley.
Okay, sorry.
He interviewed, who was on stage, who was part of our leadership. Those are the kinds of things that happen at our conference. So the economic impact of that, I think, is nothing short of amazing.
Well, and you have people like Arianna Huffington and Whitney Johnson and all these other amazing author speakers, Moria Forbes, coming to the city that they've never been before. And and we have 50 of these guys coming in all from all over the country, and they've never seen Indianapolis. So, of course, the economic impact just for those folks visiting here. In fact, one of the girls that wrote Grit to Great, talked about this yesterday when we were talking to them about coming in and about what their roles and responsibilities would be. And one of those gals, somebody here in Indiana, sits on their board in Washington, D.C. and out of New York of some of the things that they're involved in, which is the biggest PR and marketing company in the country. Am I correct, Deborah?
Yes. Yeah.
And so somebody here sits on one of their boards. So it's kind of like she's never been here. I have the opportunity to interview and talk to one of our board members I haven't talked to for a while and also see your wonderful city.
And Martha Stewart, when we brought Martha Stewart to town, she came in the night before and she started visiting local delis,
Long's Bakery,
and she started writing about them on her blog. And as a part of her contract, we had negotiated that she would meet with four of our women entrepreneurs. And she was glad to do so. They were able to learn from Martha Stewart, who's one of the, look at the brand that she created. That is powerful.
Well, and a couple of our attorneys here in the city met Val Grubb, which is another thought leader and author and on many, many wonderful boards in our country that lives in New York. Followed her to New York after they got to be friends here. And now they're doing a lot of business in New York because of that. One of our gals that pitched at the competition and Salesforce was in the room because these breakout sessions have between 400 and 500 people in them. She left there, pitched her company, and Salesforce was in the room. They called her, and now they're doing business with Salesforce all over the country. So it's what, and they're going to build this this woman's business here because of Salesforce's efforts. So. Thrilled about that.
In terms of your vision for the conference, and I know Deborah had talked about the fact that it's you see it as a 30-year, minimum of a 30-year
it's
effort.
Long-term.
Do you have, like, a first stage, second stage, third stage planned for developing this as you take care of the challenges and all of that? So, yeah.
I spend an enormous amount of my time mentoring other women in this community and state. And we have a lot of people just like that working on our team. And these wonderful women are going to be bringing this forward long after we're gone. And they'll be passing that along to people. For me, when I mentor women, I don't expect anything in return other than they go and do that for somebody else.
They pay it forward.
The first stage was, we're in our fifth year, so
getting the thing launched was the first stage.
Second stage is making sure that it can sustain itself over the long term. And then the third stage for us is to turning it over to the next leaders but we want it to be institutionalized in our state because it's so important. We're connecting. Oh, let me tell you, we have one of the largest employers in the state, Crane, leading women from Crane, who are doing a session for us from the hours of 9 to 5 in this Crane military base. We have more STEM engineers, sciences, a lot of them are women than anywhere in the Midwest. Who knew that? We didn't know that. So those are the kinds of things that we need to keep going.
It was all women. It was electronic warfare that where we were at Crane, where they were developing all these wonderful.
It was amazing.
Kind of secretive, but they wouldn't tell us what it was.
But it was being led by women.
Yeah.
Which raises the question, now that you've done this for 5 years, what are some of the lessons learned along the way? What are the things that surprised you or that you didn't know going in?
What surprised me was the absolute talent here found in women. And I can compare it to Silicon Valley because I lived there for 30 years. We have such talent here. And then we have that Midwestern work ethic on top of that talent and the tenacity and the perseverance, that's what surprised me.
Well, for me, and I'm looking at it from a strategic view from my own healthcare company, is picking the right team. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the right people on the bus, the execution's not going to go well. And so for me, it's a lot of the things that Deborah talked about. But to build on that is just making sure that you have a very good team around you.
And we have almost all, well, everybody's a volunteer. Mm-hmm. We have 70 volunteers who are professional women who show up the day of the conference and help us.
And these women that are the volunteers led by Kathy and Emily Blyse are C-suite women of their corporations. So we have one woman from AUL that's just absolutely thrilled, an EVP from there, that's going to be the handler for Arianna Huffington. So these volunteers, we have a handler from the time they come in, the moderator and or the panelist, they have a handler all day long. And these volunteers are all educated, smart, wonderful women in our community.
What, because you talked, Billy, a little while back about how it's only been 28, 29 years that, you know, a significant financial barrier to women was eliminated. Are there still legal or structural barriers that need to come down, or are the bulk of them cultural barriers?
Well, let me just talk. Let's just, as you know, our conference is for all women, but let's just talk one section of it that was for women business owners, and I'm one of those women business owners.
That's why I'm pitching the question your way.
So there's 11, almost 12 million women business owners in this country today that employ that employ 10 million women, or I'm sorry, 10 million employees. They're not all women, but they contribute a couple of $1 trillion to our economy. And that shows that Indiana is one of five, the fifth, tied with Virginia, of the most women-owned businesses being opened in today, in today's world, in today's date, in today's year. But yet we still are continually asking and debating, where is the money coming from? Why do we not get a loan? How can we get a loan, access to capital? Venture money, less than 3% of venture money goes to women in this country. We've been in access to capital. I sit on the SBA's Advocacy Council on the Hill in D.C. And there's all representation that represent women and men around the table, small businesses and mid-sized companies. We continue talking about access to capital. We've been talking about it for 30 to 40 years, and absolutely nothing has changed.
What should we do about it?
You know,
obviously, you know the issue. So,
well,
a good way to
the law. I think one of the things that
but how do we change
one of the things that we should look at in terms of venture capital funding, the majority of funds that come that go flow through venture capital come out of the pension plans, and there have been several states saying if you don't have equity, you don't get our money, and that changes things quickly.
The SBA out of D.C. will tell you that they advocate for small business owners, women, to go to community banks or credit unions and not the big box banks because of that very issue. It's very hard to get a loan from or a line of credit from a bank because of the laws as well that have because of Dodd-Frank. I just think there's just not one barrier. There's many barriers that surround that. But we continue to talk about it, and nothing's ever done about it.
What's a practical change we could make, though, that would loosen things up?
Well,
that's sort of where I'm driving the question is there, you know, let's assume we're not going to sweep it all away in a second, but is there a law that we could change or a change in the legal code that would make a difference and free things up?
I only can talk about our state. I think that our banks need to look closely more at the character. Obviously, you know, credit scores are going to factor into people getting loans or lines of credits. But I think people are going to have to look, especially our bigger banks, look at, you know, the credibility, the character of the people that are looking for that money. And a lot of these people have sophisticated business plans and performance. And I think that and I will just say, if you have a guy, the same business plan, and a woman, the same business plan, go into that same bank, the guy's going to get it. The woman is not.
Actually, that was a famous case study at Harvard Business School, and it was my friend Heidi Roizen.
Who did the work, the research?
Yeah. I think there are some other things that are being done.
Yeah.
For example, there are some CEOs in America, and I hope some in Indiana, who are saying, couldn't you find any women for this job? Have you recruited any?
Yeah.
Do you have any candidates?
Oh, I think there's incredible diversity going on in our corporations, and whether it's mandated by the state or if it's self-imposed initiatives, our corporations and our hospitals and manufacturing and academia are all doing wonderful things in diversity, and I really applaud them for that. But when you go back to just talking about women business owners, there's always been an issue and a barrier that we can never get over, and I'm frankly tired of talking about it.
Well, Sally Krawcheck.
I'm sorry, but it is an issue. I mean, what I was trying to get at is it a legal one or is it primarily a cultural one?
I think it's more so.
Or is it both?
I think it's both.
And they reinforce each other?
Yes, it's both, and they reinforce each other. I think the cultural one at this point is a little stronger because we have made advances in the laws.
And, you know, there are some folks out there that will give minority and women-owned businesses loans to start their business, or if they can't meet payroll, they'll give them a loan. But they're going to charge them 21% to 29% on top of that money that they loan them. So it's they're always forever going to be in debt in some fashion.
You know, in Europe, European countries, they've passed a law that that women have to be on boards. There has to be equity and parity. That's been bounced around here. It's very controversial. I don't even know if I agree with that, but that's one of the
What would your hesitation be about it when you say
I don't like, you know, I just don't like mandates. Mm-hmm. I think that really good leaders who are leading these org come to that on their own. They look at the results, the talent. It's just a bias that I have.
Or it could be one bank here or someone that says, you know, this is what I'm going to do for women. And I'd like to hear those kinds of stories from whether it's women or a male. You know, I would love to hear them say, you know what, I'm going to provide this and this is how we're going to do it and start something. We don't have to do it all over the country. Let's just start something here.
We've got just a little bit of time left, so I ought to give you quickly a chance. If people want to find out more about the conference, I know you say there are only going to be a few seats held back for day of if they want to show up, if they want to get a list of the speakers. Is there a URL or a website they can visit?
Yes, the Indiana Conference for Women.com.
Okay. Indiana, and is there any special place that they should look to find information? The ticket price, again, is
$295. Yes. There's a registration component. All the speakers are listed there. There's the schedule for the day of the event, and there's a phone number to call also.
Okay. And what time, if they're listening right now, it'll start at what time in the morning? And
9 a.m. It starts off with two young women, Lily and Madeline, who are going up the charts in their recording career.
Registration starts at 8.
At 8, so they should show up at 8.
Yes.
But the first talk starts at 9, and there'll be a chance
yes.
to.
And I have to add, we're getting wonderful goodie bags out this year that was donated by this wonderful woman from San Francisco that's coming in, and wonderful, great things. And we're giving away a lot of the author's books.
Yes. And the CEO of Stella and Dot has given us many things to give away.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Billy Dragoo and Deborah Collins-Stevens, who are co-founders of the Indiana Conference for Women. Also, would like to thank our listeners, particularly those who called with questions or sent them in, and invite everyone to come back on Thursday when we're going to have a conversation with New York Times columnist David Brooks and some of Indiana's best authors in anticipation of the Indiana Authors Awards. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.